Welcome to Torah Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we will be learning Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Gimel. In the last perek, we learned that Yeravam ben Nevat instituted five reforms in order to prevent the people of his kingdom of Malchut Yisrael from going to the Beit HaMikdash, lest they rebel against him and return to serving Rehavam, Melech Yehuda. The last reform recorded was that Yeravam, who was from Shevet Ephraim, stood up to sacrifice Ketoret, which only a Kohen is allowed to do. We're told that just as Yeravam was about to bring the Ketoret on the Mizbeach, in this parak we're told that an Isha Elokim arrived from Malchut Yehuda to rebuke him. We're not told this man's name, only that he was an Isha Elokim, a man of God, which we know means that he's a Navi. Interestingly, the first person in Tanakh to be called an Isha Elokim was Moshe Rabbeinu. Perhaps this illusion was created intentionally, because if Yeravam here was acting like Korach, as we already discussed in the last parak, that there are parallels between their stories, then the Isha Elokim who was opposing him was acting like Moshe. The Isha Elokim comes as Yeravam is about to bring Ketoret, and he prophesied in front of all the people standing there at this new dedication ceremony of the new king in Beit El. He prophesied that a future king of Malchut Beit David, named Yoshiyahu, who will live hundreds of years after this, will burn the bones of all the non-Kohanim who will have served at this Mizbeach, and he will burn these bones in the same fire that he'll use to destroy the Mizbeach itself. This nevuah served to shame Yeravam in two different ways. First, it attests to the fact that Malchut Beit David, which is his enemy's dynasty, will last for a very long time. And in fact, we know that Malchut Yisrael was no longer even in existence by the time that Yoshiyahu became king. So it not only serves to show him that Malchut Beit David will last for a long time, but that it will last for much longer even than his kingdom. Second, while the Isha Elokim spoke, he didn't address his speech to Yeravam, but rather he addressed his speech to the Mizbeach itself. Perhaps he ignored Yeravam in order to publicly shame him, so that all his subjects saw that even though he was a king, he was not even being directly addressed by the Navi himself. The Isha Elokim then promised to bring a mofet, a miraculous sign, to prove that he was telling the truth. And he said that the Mizbeach would break in half. The language used to describe this in Pasuk Gimel is Hine HaMizbeach Nikra, which literally means that the Mizbeach would be torn. But we know that a Mizbeach doesn't tear, it breaks. So why didn't the Isha Elokim use the more expected word, such as nishbar, that it would break, or some other verb that is applicable to a structure's being destroyed? Why did he use the term nikra, which doesn't usually apply to structures? Structures don't tear. Perhaps the Isha Elokim was trying to remind Yeravam of something else that had been recently torn, using the shem shoresh of kuf resh ayin. And this would be Yeravam's own cloak, which Achiah HaShiloni had torn to symbolize the dynasty that would be torn away from Shlomo and transferred to Yeravam. Perhaps the fact that the very Mizbeach upon which Yeravam was standing would now be, quote, torn in half, symbolized yet again that a dynasty would be torn away from someone. But this time it was going to be wrenched away from Yeravam himself. In this way, the, quote, tearing of Yeravam's Mizbeach actually represented a reversal of the original tearing of his cloak. Whereas the tearing of Yeravam's cloak essentially rewarded him a new kingdom, the tearing of his Mizbeach essentially took that very kingdom away from him. As soon as the Isha Elokim promised that the Mizbeach would break in half, Yeravam stretched out his hand towards the Isha Elokim and yelled to those around him, "Tifsuhu, grab him!" However, no sooner than Yeravam had stretched out his hand did it become frozen in place, to the point that Yeravam was compelled to ask the Isha Elokim to daven to Hashem to unfreeze his hand, which the Isha Elokim did. And yet, again, the symbolism here is very significant. A person's hand, especially a king's hand, symbolizes that person's power and authority. What a sight this must have been for Bnei Israel to behold. Their brand new king's hand lost power, and it was only restored after the Navi davened to Hashem to do so. What a clear demonstration to both Yeravam himself and his people that Hashem is really the one with the power here. Hashem is really the one who's in control of everything, not Yeravam. Once Yeravam gained control of his hand back, he invited the Isha Elokim to eat with him so that he could present him with a gift. Why did Yeravam invite the Ish HaElokim to dine with him in his palace? Of all possible responses, is this what you would do? You invite the man over who just froze your hand and tore your Mizbeach and prophesied the end of your kingdom? Like, what's going on here? But perhaps now that Yeravam is convinced that the Ish HaElokim really was a Navi Emet, really was a true Navi of Hashem, he wanted to appease him, even bribe him, so to speak, get on his good side. However, the Ish HaElokim responded that he couldn't accept Yeravam's invitation because Hashem had given him three conditions upon sending him to Beit El. One, he was not allowed to eat in Beit El. Two, he was not allowed to drink in Beit El. And three, he was not allowed to return home from Beit El the same way he came. Why did Hashem give him these three specific conditions? The Radak suggests that Hashem did not want the Ish HaElokim eating and drinking in Beit El because a person is not allowed to enter into a city of Avodah Zarah. Again, not Avodat Elohim Achirim, not that they were worshipping foreign gods, but they were worshipping Hashem in a foreign way, Avodat Hashem Zarah. And one is not allowed to enter into a city of Avodah Zarah to do anything other than to convince them to stop doing their Avodah Zarah. And perhaps Hashem wanted the Ish HaElokim to travel home using a different route so that he wouldn't learn the way well enough to be able to return there. Those are the suggestions of the Radak. Rav Alex Israel suggests that perhaps Hashem didn't want the Ish HaElokim eating and drinking specifically with the king to teach the king that a Navi is not someone whom the king can bribe to tell him what he wants to hear. The Navi is going to deliver the message of Hashem, and that's that. Perhaps, suggests Rav Israel, Hashem did not want this Ish HaElokim returning home the same way he came. Because in Tanakh, returning the same way one comes has the implication of nullifying the purpose of the journey. For instance, we're commanded many, many times in the Torah not to go back to Mitzrayim, not to return to Mitzrayim, because that would essentially nullify Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the Exodus. In the same way, perhaps, Hashem did not want the Navi to nullify the purpose for which he went to Beit El in the first place, which was to rebuke them for the Avodah Zarah that they were committing. Meanwhile, we're told that there was a Navi Zakein, an older Navi, who lived in Beit El, but who had stayed home during the ceremony. And after the ceremony was over, his son, who was there, came home to tell him what had happened. Upon hearing about the Ish HaElokim, the Navi Zakein went to look for him. Once the Ish HaElokim already left on his way home, we're told the Navi Zakein went to look for him. And when he found him, we're told that the Navi Zakein lied to the Ish HaElokim, claiming that Hashem had appeared to him to tell him that he should bring the Ish HaElokim back to his house so that he would eat and drink with him. Unfortunately, the Ish HaElokim fell for the trick, believed the Navi Zakein that Hashem had in fact appeared to him and reversed the nevuah that he had originally gotten himself, and he accompanied the Navi Zakein home. It is extremely ambiguous in the text whether this, quote, Navi Zakein was a Navi Emet or a Navi Sheker. On the one hand, he tricked the Ish HaElokim, and the Pasuk told us explicitly that he lied to him in doing so. But on the other hand, if the Pasuk told us in this particular instance that he lied, that might imply that he doesn't usually lie. We should also reflect on why this Navi Zakein was not at Yeravam's ceremony himself. He lived in Beit El. It wasn't exactly that the ceremony was so far away that he couldn't get there. Perhaps the reason why he didn't go was because he wasn't convinced that Yeravam was doing the right thing with all these reforms. Perhaps he didn't support Yeravam's Avodat Hashem Zarah, Yeravam's new reforms that instituted foreign worship of Hashem. Furthermore, later in the story, as we'll see soon, he did receive a true nevuah. The fact that the text refers to him as a Navi actually doesn't prove to us whether or not he's a Navi Emet or a Navi Sheker. In fact, when introducing the concept of a Navi Sheker in Dvarim Perek Yud Gimel, the Torah refers to this person, to this Navi Sheker, as a Navi. Ki Akum, it says in Pasuk Bet of Perek Yud Gimel in Dvarim, Ki Akum Bekir Becha Navi, Lemor Nalcha Acharei Elohim Achirim. If a Navi prophet arises in your midst, saying, let's go worship other gods. Why does the Torah refer to a false Navi that we know is a Navi Sheker because he's trying to convince Bnei Yisrael to do Avodah Zarah? Why does the Torah introduce him as a Navi? Doesn't that make it even more confusing? But Chazal explained that it's because in order to be halachically considered a Navi Sheker, he must have originally been a Navi Emet. And this can also explain why it was so hard for Bnei Yisrael to tell the difference between a Navi Emet and a Navi Sheker. because every Navi Sheker came along with past credentials as a Navi Emet. The Ramban explains, Yikra enu hakatuv Navi al pi atzmo. The Torah calls him a Navi because that's what he calls himself. In other words, he presents himself to Bnei Yisrael as if he's a real Navi, so the Torah wrote the Pasuk in that way, so that we can understand it from Bnei Yisrael's perspective. Therefore, in conclusion, it's still pretty ambiguous whether or not this Navi Zakin was a Navi Emet or a Navi Sheker. After the Ish Elokim ate with the Navi Zakin in his home, Hashem appeared to the Ish Elokim and told him that he would be punished for disobeying him. And so it was that on the Ish Elokim's way home, a lion killed him and then proceeded to stand on the side of the road next to his dead corpse and his donkey. But this is really strange, because lions don't usually wait near their kill. They usually devour it. Why did Hashem have the Ish Elokim experience this particular and very unusual death? Perhaps Hashem arranged it in this way so as to prove to all passersby who saw this that the Ish Elokim's death was not just a random occurrence, but rather it was a punishment from Hashem for disobeying his command. For only through Hashem's intervention would the lion just stand there next to his kill and not devour it. In the end of the parak, we really have to ask ourselves, what was the purpose of this entire episode? What does this have to do with the story of Yeravam? Why are we told about the Ish Elokim? Rav Alex Israel suggests that the Ish Elokim was symbolic of Yeravam to teach Yeravam and Bnei Yisrael a lesson. That even someone who is originally appointed by Hashem must continue to follow his word in order to maintain legitimacy. Yeravam started out appointed by Hashem to become a king of a new kingdom. But then he turned away from him in the last parak by building altars in Dan and Betel. So too was the Ish Elokim originally appointed by Hashem, and yet as soon as he turned away from Hashem, he was punished. Perhaps this is the reason why we're never told the Ish Elokim's name. We know him only as a man of God. We can learn from this that even a man of God, whose mission is mandated by God, will be punished by God if he disobeys him. This was true of the Ish Elokim and was also true of Yeravam. But unfortunately, Yeravam did not learn the lesson that was intended for him. He did not do tshuva, which is, by the way, the milah mancha of this perek. Rather, Yeravam continued in his bad ways. Therefore, he was punished, which is going to be spelled out in the following perek. Rabbi Chaim Jachter, who teaches at TABC in Teaneck, New Jersey, points out that there's another lesson in this parak that's relevant not only to men of God who are sent by Hashem on specific missions, but to the rest of us Jews as well. He notes that the Ish Elokim was killed because he believed the Navi Zakin when the latter claimed that Hashem had changed his mind. The horrific punishment meted out to the Ish Elokim for this mistaken belief must therefore serve as a warning and reminder for all Jews of all times that Hashem never changes his mind. This warning and reminder helped the Jews of the early years of the second millennium to withstand the pressures of the new Christians, who tried to convince them that Hashem had, quote, changed his mind, and presented humanity with a New Testament. This warning and reminder also helped the Orthodox Jews of the 19th and 20th centuries withstand the pressure coming from their own brethren, who had become members and leaders of the Reform and Conservative movements, who are trying to convince them that Hashem no longer required the observance of all the mitzvot the way that he used to. Rabbi Jachter teaches us that the lesson we should learn from this parak is that Judaism won't continue to prosper if we accept changes to our tradition based on the false belief that Hashem changes his mind. Rather, Judaism will only continue to thrive if we remain completely faithful to our unchanging and eternally relevant Torah traditions and values. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat, Malka Esther, Batzvi Yosef.